In Noho, please be seated. This Environment Court resumes.
Good morning. We'll just take a quick call through, see who's here. So, Mr. Moore, you're here. Ms. Malhotra, you're here.
Good morning.
Mr. Page, Mr. Welsh, Ms. Baker Galloway.
Good morning, ma'am.
And there may well be other parties, farming parties, who are representing themselves. So, good morning to you all. This is the continuation of the hearing on Otago's Plan Change 7. And I see that we've got our first lot of witnesses in the stand, but I'm going to do some housekeeping before we get to you. So, by way of housekeeping, as parties will know, Court undertook a site visit on Friday, which all went to plan, and I think we visited all of these sites that we were asked to visit on the schedule, with the exception of, I think, a site at the Lowburn, which was just taking a view from the river, but as all of us are familiar with the Lowburn, it wasn't found to be necessary to do that. So thank you for that opportunity, thank you for the opportunity. So we, at my request, got to see a lot of infrastructure. I was interested in the infrastructure and the conveyancing systems for water. So that was Friday. Also on Friday, and this will be maybe of some moment, will be of some moment actually to you, Mr. Page, but also on Friday we were discussing the question of dams and what to do with them. And here we're actually talking about the big public dams, not on-farm dams. And Mr. Moore was nibbling but wasn't landed, so, you know, that's a change in, that's a a possible change in position. And I had said to Mr. Moore, you really need to talk to Mr. Page about getting some facts in. And did you have a chance to do that, or did you do some more thinking over the weekend? And I know that's a huge thing to ask, because we are working very, very long hours at the moment. We've lost the audio. That's not good. Okay. We'll let you think about dams. We'll take a quick adjournment, just get that audio back online again, because we need a record. Think about dams. Other thing I want you to think about and come back to me on is, Court is interested to know whether there's been any update in water quality analysis, so state of environment, water quality trends. As you know, we were presented raw data from Dr. Snelder, and are interested to see where that goes. It may be of some moment to presentation of some cases. So give us five, and we'll be back when we get that audio running.
All right.
In Noho, please be seated.
Right. Okay. So we mentioned a couple of things that we would like in, if it's actually available. The the Dr. Snelder has now analysed the raw data for water quality, or is there any reporting on water quality for this year, which can perhaps breathe more light into what, if anything, is actually happening in relation to water quality. That seems to be part of the whole picture thinking, and it's certainly missing from the operative plan. It doesn't actually seem to be dealing with the land use side of the water management equation.
So I'll have to take some instructions on that question. I haven't become aware of further work that has been undertaken, albeit there will be further work going on in the background. Mm-hmm. So I'll come back to you on that.
Dr. Snelder, the author, is there, do we have any trend analysis for water quality? So we're very much interested in that, for the reason that, you're going to overshoot integrated management of water resources if you don't have the water quality side in.
Yes.
So we're asking you about that, and then the dam question.
Yes, so in terms of the dam question, we've been in communication with Mr. Page and highlighted the dams on which the court and the council would be interested in understanding the suite of permits that apply to each of them. So a list of dams was sent through to Mr Page. Over the weekend, there has been a supplementary brief filed by Mr Curran that deals with the Falls Dam, and within that brief there is some information about the suite of consents relating to that particular dam. That evidence deals with some other things as well, but there is at least a list of the four permits that apply to the Falls Dam. That's helpful in that situation. My suspicion is that the situation is different and varied in relation to each of the structures, but until we have the actual factual evidence setting out what permits apply to each of those structures, it's... I can't, for the council, advance the thinking in terms of what the underlying issue is and what the fix might be in terms of the integrity of the structures themselves, because it will depend on how they're consented.
Yeah, but on the issue of consented, that is something that the council should be able to dial up a report for those public dams.
You would think that that might
think
be the case. So,
so in fact, it's not that straightforward?
It's not that straightforward.
Okay, so just from memory, we were looking at Loganburn, Poolburn, Manaburn, Falls Dam, and was there anything else?
Fraser Dam.
Fraser, that was right,
Now, Loganburn may already be fully consented.
Yeah.
Mr Page probably knows more about that than I, but was there anything else? No, that was the list.
Oh, is it the Poolburn?
Poolburn.
Poolburn. So then we're looking at five dams. Okay, and And so what are the and one of the things that I wanted you to talk to or talk with Mr. Page about is the sort of questions that need to be asked and answered. So again, it's what are the issues if there is to be some movement on the dam question, what are the issues? So it's, we've got a fundamental issue of basic absence of facts, although Mr Curran now provides the consents for the Falls Dam, so that's helpful. But what are the issues such that you might want to engage with this question differently? Have you had any thinking about that?
Yes, insofar as, well, the question in my mind at present is understanding what the underlying permit or permits might actually be that are at issue in terms of consent duration.
Yeah.
The answer to which will hopefully come about by providing the suite of permits for each of the dams. And until we actually have that information, it's difficult to then articulate with any further precision what the issue is. I guess at this point the issue is one of how are the dams currently permitted and or consented. Second question, which of those permits cause an issue in terms of I'll put it long-term dam integrity. And then a third question is one of interconnectedness between the permits, because I'm unclear in my mind as to whether the issue in terms of long-term dam integrity can simply be solved by having a longer term for just one of the subset of the permits, and whether it, whether one can be separated out from the bundle of consents that operate with respect to the, the damming of the water.
And so that's the question of the integrated management, again, isn't it?
Is
the answer to we need a dam re-permitted just to re-permit for a longer period of time the damming of water, when you're going to be taking that water, and if you don't take the water, then you're going to be having major issues with the environment. Of course you're taking the water. You're damming and taking and using the water. So it's the integrated package, I would have thought. And so, And if that's the case, then quantity and quality come in, and it's one of the reasons for actually asking for that latest, if we do have latest information on water quality trends, we want to know it before embarking on this exercise.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So Mr. Page obviously represents Falls Dams, but who represents the other? Do we have other people? Other council, or is it just parties on, unrepresented parties on Fraser, Manor, Loganloo, Poolburn?
I don't recall any of those parties being separately represented.
Right.
I'm not sure if they are within Mr. Page's stable.
I don't think Fraser is. Loganburn isn't a PC7 suite of permits because they expire in 2034.
Okay.
So you don't need to worry about Loganburn in this exercise. Poolburn is part of the Ida Valley scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And Ida Valley is part of ORAC, so we can deal with that. And Ms. McKeague, who's yet to give her evidence, is very familiar with the permitting arrangements in relation to Poolburn. I don't know about Fraser. I'll need to make inquiries about the situation with Fraser. Upper Manorburn is part of the Ida Valley scheme. Lower Manorburn is part of the Galloway scheme. But again, those permits will be reasonably easy to get. My understanding is they should be easy to get hold of.
So Upper Manorburn is the Ida Valley scheme,
yes.
Which is ORUG, and Lower Manorburn, Galloway's, which I thought was ORUG as well, or is it going separately?
Well, Mr. Kelly appeared and gave evidence for the Galloway scheme, but it's generally part of ORUG in the sense that they're permit holders who take part in ORUG's activities. So I can obtain records in relation to what the Lower Manorburn permit regime is.
So generally we're struggling to get facts on the ground.
Yes.
Yeah. From which then we can identify the issues, and then from which then we can have a look at the evidence which supports a policy response or not.
Yes.
So I know your Mr. Curran now provides the suite of consents for Falls Dam, but then his evidence is dealing with something, I think, entirely different. I'm not sure what, but it's something different.
Yes.
And my suggestion to Mr. Moore was that if the region is prepared to look at this, and it was the signal given on Friday, then there needs to be at least discussion with you as to what are the issues that arise, because it's very hard to make policy on the foundation of there may be, and then I think that was the Fraser Dam evidence, there may be health and safety issues. Well, there may not. I don't know how old the dam is. Well, actually, I do. It's quite old. It's in the Depression era. But I don't know what the state or integrity of the dam is, whether that's important. I don't know how that's actually managed in terms of New Zealand regulation or other legislative instrument. I don't know.
Yes.
So I don't know what the response should be. You know, so we're actually, you know, we're getting a lot of evidence about what people think should happen, but we're not getting any foundational facts. We're actually still struggling for that here.
Yes. So you're going to hear from Mr. Sheehan tomorrow, and he is the engineer for most of these structures, and so we'll be able to discuss what the Large Dam Society guidelines are in relation to them and what needs to be happening over the coming period for, as you say, these are mostly all pre-World War II structures. For the most part, these are structures that don't have consents for the structures themselves. What we have is consents for the impoundment of water behind the structures. So that's what we refer to as the damming consents, as the right to store the water. I'm alive to your exchange about the interconnectedness of permits, and that's something that we'll need to seek to untangle between us. But in the meantime, what we can do is produce the suites of permits, or we think we can produce the suites of permits for each, and Mr. Sheehan will be able to describe what the challenges are in terms of the management of those structures in the coming period. Well, I just don't know about Fraser, yeah. Commissioner. It may be that Mr. Sheehan's familiar with Fraser. I just simply haven't asked the question.
I don't know that we're necessarily going to be assisted with more evidence on what the challenges are without an evidential basis. And I cannot say that. I've been saying that now throughout this hearing. We want the facts upon which policy is then based. And I really do want you to confer, I think it's you two, because over the issues that arise in relation to those structures. And Frey put it as questions for the court to answer in its decision, because if you start to ask the questions, then you start, in my experience, you start to get at the nub of the problem. And those questions, I imagine, are going to have a look at the integrated management of water resources, as opposed to what hitherto has been, I think, the water plan, the operative water plan approach, which is just look at quantity and just ignore the other equation, which is land use and quality and the relationships between the two. So I imagine that if you're wanting something, a policy response, which is to go for a longer period of consents for dams, you will be looking at both, probably, to the extent that you can. If you can't, then you'll be telling us, look, it's well beyond scope in 293. So you do need to confer more evidence, which is, you know, on the... more evidence like we have it is not going to assist. We want to drill now into the facts and the policy responses from those facts. Right?
Yes.
OK. So in terms of talking to each other, when do you think you can do that? Stuck with each other all day.
Well, that in itself isn't a difficulty. It's just a question of finding things around the edges, that's all.
Okay. Yeah, I know. Mm. As the hearing rolls on. Mm. Okay. So, anyway, you've got your own witness to talk to and to find out what he knows about the consenting regime. I mean, I'll take it from you that you don't know what the consenting regime is. A bit surprising that you can't just dial it up and go, this is it. But certainly your clients hopefully should know what is the stable permits that, you know, those big dams are working to.
Yes, yeah. I can understand my friend's constraints about getting access to the records. That's an ongoing challenge.
Okay. So that's dams, and that's water quality. What else had I on the list? Also from Friday, we indicated that we will have questions of drafting, if you like, on the joint witness statement, which particularly as it pertains to, maybe as it pertains to primary sector interests, with what we've seen. So we'll have questions. So I don't know that it's an adequate response just to put those to Mr. De Palsmaker and to Ms. Dicey, that, you know, other primary sector planners, if not required to be there, should have the opportunity to be there, because I'm not going to go another round of consultation.
Yeah.
We'll put the questions, and either they're there or not there, but they will be drafting questions. So not taking you necessarily in a different direction from what's actually been identified for the schedule and the provisions relating to the schedule and that objective, but looking at drafting around that. But I'll cover that off in today's minute. And the only other thing, it's just a suggestion. So a lot of farmers last week did not have an adequate grasp on where that schedule was going. No surprises there, because it's going at a rapid pace and there's not much description by the witnesses as to what they're doing and why. And, you know, even us as a bench are sitting here going, I wonder what that means. So we have this suggestion, you know, planning hearings can be dry as bones as people, you know, debate the meaning of words without realising that it's people and community that, you know, those words speak to. So, you know, you can have, when the planners come back, another dry run at the provisions, or you can actually have both sides of the table to the extent that you need to, because, in fact, I think you're more or less largely in agreement on the schedules. You can actually have somebody present on what does this schedule mean, and so that you can bring people and communities with you. I think that's really important, to bring people and communities with you, because there have been some significant changes. A number of key elements of MOOT which were missed last week, and that is not a criticism, because there's just been barely any explanation. And anyway, it's not, you know, it's my full-time job, but it's not the farmer's full-time job to get your heads around this and understand what it means. So it doesn't look like your normal dry run, you know, your normal evidence in a planning hearing. What do you both think about that?
Well, there is an enormous difference in levels of understanding amongst the farming community.
Yeah, sure.
Some are completely on top of it, and some barely have got a grasp of what we're doing here at all. And so, if the goal is to fully inform the entire farming community about how the schedule works, I suspect we're not going to achieve that through this process. That's really for us to explain to our clients about where we're going. In terms of a conceptual understanding about what the schedule is for, it has moved during the course of this hearing, and from my client's point of view, entirely positively. And that's a good thing, and I think there's a general understanding that we are now trying to use the schedule to reflect actual historic water use, so that people are not at risk of losing access to water through the operation of the schedule. I think we're kind of there about that's the purpose of the exercise. And I'm not sure how much we're going to be able to achieve in terms of communicating the detail of that through the course of this process.
But even a high-level conceptual run is essential. I mean, we still had witnesses in the farming community who were not on board with the, you know, that the purpose of the schedule is to ensure that the allocation is brought forward. I can think of one person last week who thought that what would be required is that all border dikes, while flooding, would be required to change to spray irrigation. You're not going to achieve that in this plan change, nor is it the intention of the plan change to go in that direction. But it's not the case, as another witness thought. Therefore, somewhat erratically, Region has thrown out its policy on efficient use of water. It's not that either. And so, you know, the conceptualisation of the schedule has yet to be properly communicated to the community, because while, you know, if parties disagree on some fundamentals, they don't disagree on the need at least to have a method in some plan somewhere which Region has to follow, as opposed to, you know, the method with the little M back in the office, and no one's even quite sure what, you know, what the regional council staff are doing when it comes to assessing resource consent. So the schedule does at least that. It, you know, there's some common position. So conceptually, I think there needs to be an explanation. And gee, if your witnesses can't explain it, then it's probably not doing its work properly.
Yes. And to some extent, that might be simply a function of how much these issues have travelled over the course of the hearing. As you've observed, this is our day jobs. Farmers are trying to catch up with all this sometime between 8 and 11 o'clock at night. And that's just the reality of where we are, I suspect.
Okay, Mr. Moore.
Reflecting back on last week and the understanding of some of the witnesses, in my mind at least, confirmed the concerns that the farming community hadn't had probably the opportunity to keep up with the rate at which the schedule had changed, given the underlying concerns that some of those witnesses held about the thought they might have less water over the next 6-year period. So insofar as there is a concern, it's a valid concern in terms of the communication. When I look at the various joint witness statements, one of the first questions put was, what is the purpose of the schedule? And there seems to have been consistent agreement between all of the witnesses about the three purposes of the schedule. And whilst that is communicated early on in the joint witness statement. My suspicion is that that's simply a document that hasn't been read with much... well, the parties perhaps haven't had the time to read that in the manner that we perhaps have read. So the question then becomes, how do we better communicate at that higher conceptual level precisely what is it that the schedule is seeking to achieve? My view is that that is a task that could be done as part of the presentation of the joint witness statements back to the court. So at least then there is that that explanation setting out, well, what is it seeking to achieve? And that may then perhaps be a useful point in time at which the community can be invited to see or to watch or to reflect back on.
To see and watch, at least to have that opportunity.
In terms of capturing that in writing ahead of that time, not quite sure where we were at in terms of the proposal to bring the joint witness statements back.
It's sitting with me with a minute to go, It's as with anything, do you fire out a number of minutes or do you try and fire out 1 minute? Because, you know, over communication is, it's not helpful either. It just bogs people, bogs the inbox down, I was told last week, so it's fair enough. But, we also have another joint a witness conference running today, which I think maybe there will be an output from today, at least that was Commissioner Dunlop's hope. And if there was an output from that, at least the output should be, you know, we could have that running alongside that statement, and there'll be some direction sought in terms of folk coming back to present on that too. So I have delayed whilst waiting, to see what happens today, to see what your responses are on dams, to see what you have to say about our water quality as well, if there's any update from Dr. Snelder's evidence.
Okay, well, insofar as we could advance that, I would say the time to have that information and that summary given will be when the joint witness statements are presented.
I don't know that it's necessarily helpful or required, rather, to have another brief of evidence about that schedule, but maybe, or maybe you could have a PowerPoint about that schedule. But if you can't communicate it easily in a way which is available to all people, whether highly, geared into water quality, water issues or not, it's got to be available to all members of the community, then we're probably struggling. So,
It strikes me that, insofar as that information is presented, it may well be identifying or confirming the three purposes of them schedule and then describing in relation to each of those purposes how the schedule then actually responds to that purpose. So that may aid in the collective understanding of what is sought to be achieved.
All right. And there's not a lot of difference. Oh, I might have this wrong. I've only had one read through of the JWS and certainly not the information that came over the weekend. But I don't think there's a lot of difference in terms of what the controlled activity rule and the RDA rule should be doing, and I think that's really helpful to have to talk to that. And then, of course, the parties then depart wanting, different things, and that's fine. That's the decision for the court.
Yes, but and coming back to the method, my recollection is there's a strong degree of agreement in relation to the content of the schedule, which stage it becomes then a task of explanation in terms of what's being jointly done. Does it actually answer the questions
or not
address the purposes which have been identified?
Okay, thank you. So that's how I would see it. Also, a presentation at the beginning of the joint impanelling of witnesses, and whether that's just done by Mr. De Palsmaker or by your kind, your witness, I'm easy. I just need a good communicator. I don't think the differences in wording are critical to the presentation or conceptualisation of the plan change.
I,
suspicion is it might be Mr. Wilson for the council might be best placed, but
whoever your best communicator is, that's actually the key thing too. You've got to have somebody whose language is available for everybody to understand.
Understood.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty, anything else before we get going?
Yes, sorry, one thing. I lodged with the court a couple of diagrams last week in relation to the Minahiri Care.
Schematics?
Yes.
Yeah, that was the other thing we were going to get back to you about.
Yes.
Okay, did you? You might have done.
I did, and we were directed to figure out whether they could come in by consent or whether they
needed
a
witness. Did you need someone to talk to them?
Yes. Yeah. Mm. And so I think that there's two diagrams.
Yes.
One relatively simple and one rather less so.
Oh, yeah.
The rather less so is the what's called the logic diagram for the Goldsum model that Mr. Roddy Henderson discussed in his evidence. And I think it's my friend's view that they would prefer the Goldsum diagram to be introduced to the court with an explanation from somebody who knows how it works. Now, I'm relaxed about that. It's just the question then is who understands how it works. From my client's point of view, the existing witness that knows how it works is Mr. Hickey. Mr. Williams probably has the most encyclopedic knowledge, but he isn't a witness yet. So it's a question of whether we call Mr. Williams or whether we call Mr. Hickey or whether we do neither of those things, really.
What's the second one about? Manukiri Kia overview map. What's that?
Yeah. So the overview map was just to show where the TRIBs in relation to the take point locations exist. It's a rather simple diagram, but just to help assist the understanding of the Goldsum logic diagram. Because the Goldsum one's organised much like the London Underground map. It doesn't show where things actually are in reality, whereas the overview does.
Oh, I see. And neither have those three critical minimum flows in. What is it? 512 at Falls Dam, OFA.
Yeah.
I've forgotten what OFA was, but and then 900 a voluntary. Voluntary flow at the campsite.
Well, the 500 at Falls is a condition of the discharge consent from Falls Dam rather than a plan condition, whereas 812 at OFA is in Schedule 2A to the Regional Plan Water.
Eight one two at OFA, is it?
I'm sorry?
812 at OFA.
Yes.
Schedule 2. And then you've got that voluntary at the campground of 900, was it?
900 is the voluntary at campground, yes.
Okay.
So if you look at the Goldsum logic diagram, and if we start at the top, you can see Falls Dam shown as a triangle with a blue with a black dot marking what is a flow output site, which says below Falls Dam. That's where 500 applies.
Yeah, no, I'm sure I'll be able to follow the narrative from there. But you're thinking so what hasn't been agreed is whether or not you need a witness to present to this and who that witness should be. Mr. Moore, you got any thoughts on that?
Having spent a little more time with the diagram, I'm content with it being admitted by consent in terms of the information it's conveying. It has a helpful key, and insofar as it essentially is a wiring diagram for the catchment, unless the court requires further explanation, I'm content to it being admitted.
Okay. Ms. Baker-Galloway, have you got any thoughts about that?
No, ma'am. No, nothing to contribute. I'm not really engaged in
anything I've said thus far. Sorry, I should have come back to you because it involves private sector, therefore it's taking you in. Yeah.
Yeah. So no, we're not terribly engaged in this particular issue. So
okay.
I've got nothing to contribute.
All right, Mr. Walsh. I didn't think you'd be engaged. No. Okay. Thank you. All right, we'll look at that and make a decision whether to admit it by consent. So we'll probably look at it over lunchtime. But thank you very much. That is part of the whole picture. So, and very helpful to have that in. Okay, so where we've left it, schematics, us, lunchtime, and come back to you. Dams, council to talk about permit identification. Issue identification, and then you'd need to talk about further evidence or not. Mr. Moore, you're going to investigate water quality and trend reporting, whether there's an update to really the raw data presented by Dr. Snelder, and come back to us about that. And then we'll come back to parties as to whether that should be admitted. My sense of it is it's absolutely essential for dams, if you're looking at an exception to dams or something for dams, a policy response for dams. But and as part of that, again, it's part of that whole picture, which at the commencement of the hearing, a bit fuzzy, you know, because it's just raw data being presented. So is there any change? Probably would need to know that. But I'll hear from parties first. Okay. And then I think there is broad agreement that there can be a presentation, or conceptually, of the schedule. And you'll just have to think about who your best speaker is. Yeah. Because your best expert is not necessarily your best communicator. So we're looking for somebody with communication skills. And I'll signal that primary sector should be all in for that JWS, because the court has questions on drafting.
Are you envisaging that all of those witnesses would be called together for that exercise?
Jointly impanelled, absolutely. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. Okay, very good. So if you can come back, Council, when you've got something to do, can you come back to us 9 o'clock tomorrow? How does that sound? Yep, very good. Okay. So eventually we got there, and we're now in your hands. Ms. Sangster, giving evidence. I see your husband's with you.
Yes.
And I think I overheard when I was setting up this morning that you're driving the PowerPoint, I think. Is that right?
No? I was going to say I would like to do a PowerPoint, and I thought, because I've been listening to the audio, and it's very awkward when people try to point things out, so I thought it would be helpful if he could stand up and point things out for you, if that's okay.
So you're also pointing things out? Okay. Do we need to jointly
swear
in? Probably, yeah.
I'll go have religious.
I can say, Mr. Sangster, is that we've actually read your statement of evidence, so we don't need to reread that. But rather, as everybody has had an opportunity to comment on things which have arisen during the course of the hearing that you want to comment on, or to emphasise the key points that you want the court to understand. So, you know, so you're welcome to do both, but I don't need you to read the evidence because we've read the evidence. So we're in your hands as to how you'd like to proceed, and also on your slides as well.
Can I just ask
What you've just handed up is exactly the same as what we've
Apart from paragraph 34.
Apart from, okay.
Which I've highlighted for you.
So we might actually get you to talk about paragraph 34, but before we get you to do anything, I think, Mr Moore, if you could assist the court and Mr Moore, all he's going to do is he's going to get you to confirm your evidence, check to see whether or not there's any corrections, etc. So he's helping the court out because you haven't got counsel with us.
Now, Mrs Sangster, can you please confirm your full name for the record?
Hilary Dawn Sangster.
And you are appearing today on behalf of Glen Eyre Limited?
Yes.
And Glen Eyre Limited lodged a submission in relation to Plan Change 7?
Yes.
And you have prepared a statement of evidence dated 1 February 2021?
Yes.
Are there any corrections that you wish to make to that statement of evidence?
Paragraph 34, because I didn't have that information at the time of writing it.
So the version of your statement of evidence circulated today has an additional paragraph inserted into it as paragraph 34?
Yes.
And then presumably the number sequencing simply then follows on with that inserted paragraph?
Yes.
So do you confirm that the evidence that you have given and the evidence you are about to give is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes.
Now, you have also circulated this morning another document which is headed up Thoughts on Farmer Evidence and Court Questions. Is that the summary statement of the key points from your evidence that you wish to make, or is that something different?
So, Your Honour, I've been listening to some of the farmer evidence on audio, and particularly to the questions that you've been asking the farmers and the commissioners have been asking, and I prepared some thoughts that I think would be helpful for you, and if you have time, I would like to read that to you or have it admitted for you to read later.
Oh, we have time, so... We'll hear you, and if you have time, need more time to digest what's been said and ask, are you any questions? Just
I'll let you know.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder whether we might just have, is it Mr. Sangster?
Yes.
If you could perhaps confirm your full name for the record.
David Cyril Sangster.
And do you confirm that any evidence that you give today will be true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
I do, yes.
Thank you. So we're in your hands, Mrs. Sangster, and I understand you'll take the court through the summary. And you had a PowerPoint as well.
Yes, so, Your Honour, if it's okay, what I would like to do is present this as a case study.
Mm-hmm.
I've arranged my slides. It might be slightly different to the order you have because I think it fits with the words.
Mm-hmm.
I really want it to be a positive experience and for you to ask me questions throughout it if you would like to. I think it will be helpful for you and give you some good insight and I will deviate off my written stuff to talk a little bit about a few slides. I've also added a few slides that you haven't had previously, which is about the Tyree Scroll Plain, because I noticed that you asked questions about that the other day. I have prepared it like that. It will be difficult for me to change the way I present. I'm sorry.
No. We're in your hands. As I said, we have read your first statement and... So it's your
thank you.
Change, your region, so you present.
Thank you much. Thank you. Ko Rokumpela te Maunga, ko Tairi te Awa, ko Ngāti Pākehā te Iwi, ko Dawn Sangster taka ingoa. Nō mene tautou āho, nō riwa tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā tātou katoa. Good morning, Your Honour, Commissioners and everybody. I would like to present to you today a case study about our farm and our journey with irrigation because I think it will provide the court with some good context and insights. I intend this to be a positive presentation and hope it is helpful. So my full name is Hilary Dawn Sangster. My husband David and I farm Glen Eyre, 2,870 hectare enterprise in the Meneototo. David and I have been farming together for over 30 years and we have three sons. Glen Eyre Limited is composed of a 1,930-hectare property in the Styx Valley, a 600-hectare property near Patira, and a 343-hectare run block in the Waitsau Valley. Glen Eyre has been in our family for four generations. David and I farm with my sister and brother-in-law, Carolyn and Drew Dundas, who live on the Styx property. I won't read all those qualifications, But I would like to talk to point 10. So I am a facilitator for the Agri-Women's Development Trust programs on business planning and governance. And Your Honour, under point 10, if you don't mind, I want to digress for a minute and ask you if you have noticed all the farming women who have made submissions and who have come to present to you in court. Mm. Emma Crutchley, Kelly Heckler, Margaret Hoare, Renee Ware, to name a few.
Yep, no, we have noticed that, that the farming community has a very impressive and strong lineup of farming women.
Mm. Okay, so I want to tell you about why that is. So this has come about because of the Red Meat Profit Partnership Program, which was a primary growth partnership program that worked over 7 years to increase productivity and profitability in the red meat sector. One of the programs, Understanding Your Farming Business, was developed and facilitated by the Agri-Women's Development Trust to equip women with the skills and confidence to fully participate in their farming business. We taught them that they could be a critical farming partner in the business, particularly in the strategic and governance space. We taught them how to develop business plans and visions for their farm businesses and to take a long-term view when planning. We introduced them to the 4P model and how to think holistically about what success looks like rather than the win-lose model of just profit. We encouraged them to set goals in these four areas: profit. We still need profitable farming businesses, not just for the bank manager, but because it enables choices. People, our family, our staff, and our community. Planet, soils, water, biodiversity on our farms, but also in our wider catchment. Progress, a new concept, but involves thinking about the business's ability to adapt to change, which is very relevant at the moment. And I want to thank them all very much for stepping up and engaging in this important conversation. So Glenair was purchased in 1926 in the Styx Valley for the Aiken family by my great-grandfather. David and I farmed the 600-hectare property at Paterua, which my evidence relates to. It's a sheep and beef property with severe winters and hot summers. The property, like many in the Meneatota, is reliant on irrigation to ensure supplementary feed for the winter and summer feed to ensure economic viability. So that's a slide of our family: David, me, my three sons, Jordan, Peter and Robert, my sister Carolyn and brother-in-law Drew Dundas. That's a slide at the Styx showing the severe winter and the need for supplementary feed. This is the photos of the scroll plane. So this photo is taken at the top of the hill. Dave, can you leap to your feet, darling? So David's going to point out to you the southern end of the Styx Valley and the road over to Lake Onslow. And then on the next slide, looking down the valley towards the Meneatoto Plain. This is a large flood. So we define a large flood when we're at the house at the Styx as if it comes to the cattle shed. So that is a large flood in the Tyree River. And then what happens, the water moves down, fills the lagoons and the oxbows, and you get this sort of thing, which is absolutely spectacular, as you probably saw if you flew over it the other day.
We did.
Yeah. So this is the farm at Paterua, and David, if you just point out the house, and then we've got some border dike irrigation in the front of the photo. Those hills at the far side are along the Puketoi, and the Styx Valley in the southern corner. This is our run block property at the Whitesail Valley, a dryland run block. We run Angora goats, plus sheep and beef there. And then this is a map of the farm, and I'll get David to point out a few things on this. So the main road with Ranfurly, other way, dear. It's good. Ranfurly, down there over the Tyree River, and Paterua in the other direction. You can see that the red line at the top of the map is the Tyree River. The Salburn Creek, David, which you heard about the other day from Gavin Herlihy, which flows down through our property and out to the river. Yep. And then Shepherd's Creek, which this presentation is mostly about. And it's a drain, and you can see how straight it is. It was put in, we think, in the 1950s. This drain we gauged for our application, and on that particular day there was 100 litres at the top and 150 litres a second when it reached the Tyree River. We have two small irrigation dams. Can you point them out there? Great, thank you. So we're sheep farmers, and for the farmers in the room, those are weaning day hoggets with lambs at foot. So irrigation development. The Paddywarra property Glenfield was purchased in 2001. It had an irrigation right out of Shepherd's Creek drain dating back to 1982. David and I renewed this as an RMA right in 2003 and invested in K-Line spray system. No consultants were used to process the application and the cost was minimal. The consent was for 39 litres a second. The property had two small storage dams that David pointed out to you that were used for border dike and flood irrigation. In 2008, we invested in K-Line irrigation for our 28 litre a second right out of the Tyro River. And the property also had 48 shares in the Maniatota East Side Irrigation Scheme, and that water was used for border dike and flood irrigation. 2015, in conjunction with the neighbours, we contributed capital to pipe the water and put in a 57-hectare centre pivot with VRI, and at the same time we began putting in reticulated stock water and fencing waterways and developing our White Sow dryland run block. So this is a photo of what we were irrigating with that scheme water. So you can see it wasn't great pasture quality, lots of rushes and plenty of ditches. This was some of the border dike, so better. But the thing with those consents are that we got 12 heads of water for 24 hours, and then you didn't get the water back for 21 days. So you had to take the water whether you needed it or not, and even if it was raining, we still had to take the water. So there was a lot of overwatering, a lot of runoff, and not the best result. Just talk to you about the different irrigation we have on our property. So the blue area is the Maniatoto scheme water, and you can see that we've put in the pivot of 57 hectares, and we also put in a small area of K-Line. Can you point that out, David? So it's oversized for the amount of water available. So at times during our roster of 20 days, we must turn that pivot off. Now, how we manage that is we have VRI. So every time that pivot goes over the drain or across the rain lane or the end gun lets close to the Salburn Creek, we turn it off. The nozzles turn off when it goes over a water trough. Every paddock is GPS'd. So we can turn off individual paddocks from our phone, if need be, or off a laptop. We can put crop into certain paddocks, get the crop established, and then turn it off. So it enables you to stretch your water and irrigate more area, but very efficiently. And, of course, it forces you to be very strategic and think about how to do that. And at the moment, that dry, gravelly area that we K-line, so we use that light blue, we use that water on there in the spring, but once the evapotranspiration rates are higher, we focus the water on the pivot with the better soils. But with the changes to winter regulation and grazing, that area is invaluable for us. So we'll have crops under that pivot, but we use that dry, gravelly area for a runoff. So it's a really useful part. And being able to think about your soil types and what you're trying to do, really, you know, thinking holistically about it is a really good thing, I believe. Is there any questions about that? Because it's quite important.
No.
Clear? So then if we look at the yellow area. So this is the Tyree right that we have for 28 litres a second, which is tied to the minimum flow at the Waipiata. When the flow at Waipiata gets to 1,200 cumex, we start rationing and rostering our water.
At 1,200
cumex? At 1,200. So the minimum flow is at 1,000.
Yeah.
When it's at 1,200, we start. Mm-hmm. So there's four of us, and Susie McKeague manages that process for us, and we all share the cost of her doing it. Some years, like this year, for example, we were rationing, but we were never turned completely off. Last year, we might have been off for 4 weeks and off and on. And the first thing I do every morning is I look at the ORC website and see where it is. So, you know, we are very conscious and of being compliant with that minimum flow condition. How we manage that? So that area is oversized as well. We use lucerne, which we can irrigate in the spring, and then we don't put water on it. We put in crops into that area because we know that there's a possibility every year that we could lose water in there for weeks. So we have to really think about our system and what crops we can put in that we can, when the water gets short, we can turn off. The orange area is the Sowburn Water Users Group. So we have a small right at the bottom of that, and we're part of the Sowburn Group. We've got 17.5 litres a second, and we're the only one on that right with a residual flow of 70 litres a second. We use it for the shoulders of the season because there isn't enough water through the summer. And our strategy with that is to put all that area in Lucerne, and we've been doing this over a number of years, and we've just about got there. So in the future, we'll possibly irrigate that once or twice in the spring. That will be enough, and we'll have our Lucerne there. But it's a useful right for getting crops established and for getting that Lucerne established. And then we come to Shepherd's Creek. So when we bought the farm, we had that red area was in Border Dyke. So David, if you point out the top dam, did the top and bottom, what we call the top and bottom borders. Point to that, dear. Yeah, those two, yep. And then the other dam did the area around the house. As well as that, the water came across that top paddock in orange. Yep. And then it flowed down that paddock, down there and right through all that green area, and that was your irrigation and your stock water. So they just let the water go, filled up all the hollows, and that was stock water. And that was the situation we came to. So at that time, we decided that wasn't really what we wanted to be doing. And so we decided that we wanted to put in K-line irrigation. And so we went to the bottom of the creek because we knew that there was more water there. And we put in that take point two and put in a K-line system, which could irrigate potentially all that green area. Now, what happened in the summer was the Maniototo scheme water is very reliable. The Tyree River was unreliable, so we didn't have that. We had to prioritise our Shepherd's Creek water, so we wouldn't do any border dike flow, and we would use the water on our K-line area. And then as it got dry, we had a variable speed drive on the pump, so we would just start turning off lines. And although I've got quite a large area shaded, we could get down to some days you didn't have much water at all, and we'd get down to just a few paddocks. So that was the situation we had. That's a pivot under the Maniototo irrigation scheme water, and you can see the difference in the improvement in the pasture quality. This here is a picture of Shepherd's Creek drain, and that is looking upstream towards Crossans, who are the other user, and the photo on the right is looking downstream at a higher flow. That is Shepherd's Creek drain. In the high rainfall in January the 2nd. You can probably sit down, Dave. And then that's what happens, water all over. The Sowburn Creek also floods. And the Tyree River floods. So we started thinking about the problem we were trying to solve. Changing expectations on irrigators and the need to improve water quality started us thinking about the issues for our property. Border dike and flood irrigation methods were not going to be compliant with Plan Change 6A. We either had too much water with flooding or too little water with summer dry conditions and not enough water storage. Our Shepherd's Creek drain consent was due for renewal in 2023. The Tyree River was fully allocated and our right was unreliable with minimum flow conditions. There was changes to freshwater management from government on the horizon and an increasing focus on water quality, and spray irrigation and water storage were very expensive. We decided that the sustainable long-term solution for our property was to build a storage dam, a large storage dam, and we had a suitable location. We would apply for a supplementary take to fill the dam by gravity when there was plenty of water and use this in the summer. When the flows were under pressure, we would remove the lower point of take, that take point two, where we put the spray in, and that would ensure that there would be more water reaching the Tyree River, and we thought that would please affected parties. We would convert all our existing K-line flood and border dike irrigation to the most efficient method, which was a centre pivot with VRI. It was a good time to do it. Commodity prices were high, interest rates were low, And we thought we were still fit and healthy enough to do this ambitious project, and we had enough equity to borrow the $1 million that would be required. As part of the development, we plan to continue with our reticulated stock water scheme. There'd be more subdivision and fencing of waterways. Our consents would be compliant and secure if our children wanted to go farming. And we knew that we'd need a long consent time to justify the capital investment and secure the banking support. And we were really keen to get the consent renewed and the dam and the pivot in place for the 2020-21 irrigation season. Just go back to the history of Shepherd's Creek. So in 2003, we renewed our right as an RMA for 20 years. And at the same time, our upstream neighbour, James and Gavin Crossan, renewed theirs. And the Regional Council only gave them 10 years because they were not spray irrigating. This is important. As farmers, we were given a regulatory signal that to obtain longer consents, the water must be used efficiently and sprayed on, and the Crossans were given 10 years to get their pivot and K-lines installed. We now have a water sharing agreement with the Crossans, which was done when they renewed their right in 2013. It was renewed for 30 years, and it cost them $7,000, which they were very annoyed at the time. So we started in May 2019. We engaged McKeek Consultancy to help us prepare our application. We visited the ORC that same month and confirmed that what we were proposing was a good solution. And by September, we had our 60-page comprehensive application submitted, which I've given you a copy of earlier. There was no site visit from the ORC, but a minor request for some information, plus a fish survey, which we did. And we also prepared our dam application and submitted this in November 2019. Our first meeting with affected parties, DOC, Okaha and Fish and Game, was very unsatisfactory from our point of view. We were also alarmed to meet several other farming couples in the waiting room who'd been trying to get a decision out of the affected parties for several years. There was no timelines or commitments about anything and a lack of clarity around next steps. Numerous emails and phone calls by myself and McKee Consultancy failed to get them to commit to a site visit or a meeting in person. And the decision to go to a hearing was made when it became apparent that they were in no hurry to make a decision. And on the other hand, we had dam builders wanting to start work over the summer, which we wanted, so that we could fill the dam over the winter period and be ready for the next irrigation season. And if we didn't commit, they would go to another job. In November 2019, we made the decision to go to a hearing as we considered it the best way to get the affected parties to engage and make some decisions so that we could move forward with our proposed development. DOC attended a pre-hearing meeting and we successfully worked through their issues and they changed their submission to neutral. Their things were to align expiry with the Crossan's right in 2043, which we agreed with, and some conditions on eels. Iwi and Fish and Game did not attend, nor did they attend the hearing on the day despite opposing the application. Ahead of the hearing, the 25th of February, the ORC issued a Section 42 report recommending a 10-year consent for the primary take and a 34-year take for the new supplementary right. And on the day of the hearing, March the 17th, 2020, this recommendation was changed to 6 years for each permit. And the reason given was that Plan Change 7 was to be notified the next day and ORC considered that our application should be assessed under it. The addendum and errata that was presented at the hearing came as a complete surprise to us. The ORC also had legal counsel for themselves present, which we had no prior knowledge of. We were shocked with the change in recommendation of consent term as the original Section 42 report gave us the confidence to let the dam builders start work, as there was no evidence to the contrary.
Sorry, can you say that again? That last sentence. We were shocked and then...
We were shocked with the change in recommendation of consent term as the original Section 42 report gave us the confidence to let the dam builders start work.
I see. Yeah.
There was no evidence to the contrary. Yeah. Our bank manager was sitting in the hearing and it was a surprise to him as well. We had not ordered the pivot, as we thought it prudent to wait for the permit to be issued, but we were anxious about time delays, as there was a 14-week wait period to get the pivot out of Europe, and we knew it would make it hard to get it up and running during the spring when we were busy. The Commissioner conducted a site visit the day after the hearing, and there were multiple minutes and legal opinions from both sides on the weight that should be given to Plan Change 7 following the hearing. The hearing was conducted by an independent hearing commissioner as all of the councillors were deemed conflicted. The commissioner found in our favour and issued a 24-year consent for the primary take to align with the only other right upstream, who we have the water sharing agreement with, and he issued 34 years for the supplementary permit to align with the consent for the dam. The consenting of the dam was reasonably straightforward. The total cost was $10,870 and it was completed in 5 weeks. The consent for the renewal of the water permit was a different story. From the date of the application being lodged to the date of the decision being issued was 32 weeks and it had cost us $52,870. We waited another 17 weeks to receive the ORC processing cost invoice of $48,220, which we objected to. We would like to suggest that these sort of costs are unreasonable, unnecessary and unaffordable for Otago water users. The ORC appointed an independent commissioner to hear our objection to their invoice and the hearing was held on the 11th of December 2020. We objected because we had a legal opinion that we were not liable to pay the ORC legal costs. We also think there's room for some improvements to be made regarding processing applications and invoicing, and we have asked the Commissioner to write some recommendations for policies and procedures that will ensure that future water users have a better experience than we did, and that ORC staff also have more clarity around their roles in processing applications. The decision was released on the 9th of February 2021 and our ORC charges were reduced by $17,000. The Commissioner also provided the ORC with some recommendations for improvements. When we started this process, we knew it would be a $1 million project. And in fact, if you include costs such as fencing and water supply, it's in excess of $1 million. We would like to make the point that short-term consents of 6 years cannot sustain the investment required to improve water storage, environmental flows and irrigation efficiency. Everyone recognises that this is the right thing to be doing. It does seem bizarre that the ORC wants to set up a regime through Plan Change 7 to maintain the status quo when all parties agree that the status quo should be improved. The whole process since we lodged the application in September 2019 has been one of the most difficult in our farming career and we have been through challenging periods before. We found it extremely frustrating that although we'd designed a cohesive proposal with strong environmental outcomes, the affected parties in ORC would not support a long-term consent. When we started, we had no idea that it would take so long and be so expensive. The hearing was extremely stressful, exasperated by the fact that we knew it would be expensive, but the introduction of Plan Change 7 took it to a whole new level, and the legal opinions that flowed afterwards just added cost. While the dam was being built, we were anxiously waiting the Commissioner decision. David and I both started having sleep issues, and he went to the doctor for sleeping pills. I felt incredibly guilty for putting the business under so much financial pressure. And I remember the 24th of April when we got the decision, we were in the sheepyards, and Ros Day from McKeague's sent an email congratulating us. There was no celebratory drinks. I just cried and cried. We started off feeling so excited about our new dam and pivot and all the benefits it would bring to the business. And during the past 18 months, we haven't had much enjoyment from it at all. It will not be easy to present this case to you, but we do so in the hope that you will consider this case study as part of your decision. We believe every case should be on its own merits. The applicants, such as ourselves, who are prepared to prepare a comprehensive application that improves the status quo at considerable capital expense, should be rewarded with certainty of tenure to enable financing. Thank you. And then just some photos. Mm-hmm. So that was the view from our house before we started. That's the view now. And that's a drone footage of the dam.
We've got two dams. Three dams, okay. So the one we're looking at, well, in each case, are they supplementing flow at times of restrictions or they got other purposes?
So this dam is for irrigation. Mm-hmm. So maybe it'll make it clearer. So what happens now is the water flows into those two little dams mm-hmm. and then under the house by gravity and round into the new dam.
Right.
So they're for irrigation and stock water.
Yeah, and so I was really interested in whether that supplements flows at, you know, irrigation when there is a restricted flow, or is it to irrigate, in fact, when there's no flow?
Both.
Both, yeah. Okay.
Well, all of that.
The way it works is that we measure it at this point here. It's measured here.
Yeah.
That's where we measure it.
Mm-hmm.
And it lets, when the creature overflow, it's just going straight out, and we can now irrigate more reliable, and that's the storage, so that when those low flows are there, you're not affecting it. And with the supplement, it now means we don't have to take water because we've got that water stored on the high flows too. Mm. So we take a lot of water on the high flows, and it just evens it out.
Okay.
It's got to be better for the environment.
All right. Next question about your dam consents. What's the consent? Was that like a land use consent?
So I've got three consents, and I've got them if you want to see them. But I think it's to store water, discharge water, and take water. Is it? Three of them. Do you want me to look?
So you've got no land use consents on that?
No. Well, we weren't changing land use.
Pardon?
We weren't changing land use, no.
Well, yeah, when we're putting a structure on land, I just was interested to know whether that required consent. I think the answer is no.
No.
And what was the discharge? How does the discharge consent work in relation to the dam?
So the water, the water is metered out of the dam as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're storing water, you're taking water from
yes.
the dam. And what's the discharge part? I didn't get that. Why do you need a discharge consent?
I'm just saying that maybe I don't. To take and use surface water from a water storage reservoir.
Yeah.
To dam surface water for the purpose of storage and irrigation.
Yep.
And to discharge water from a water storage reservoir for the purpose of dam safety.
Dam safety, okay, gotcha. And you got those consents in relation to the big dam that we see at the top of the slide, or the centre of the slide next to the pivot area. But those two smaller dams, do you have similar consents or,
no.
or different? No. So what sort of consents do you have, if any, in relation to the smaller dams?
None. I think they're
they
so small.
They were built probably 45 or 40 years ago.
Okay.
So there's no consents. There was no consents when we went there. Mm. When we purchased the place, it wasn't an issue.
Mm. Mm. So no requirement to renew any storage or to seek storage or to seek take and use from those smaller dams. They're just, okay, all right.
No, it's just part of the irrigation system.
Sure. All right, so I'm going to, is there anything else you want to say? I had thought you were going to be presenting on this because your thoughts.
My thoughts, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd like to talk to a little about the thoughts, maybe just on the topics that you think are worthwhile. If you're not interested in the topic, that's fine.
I'm in your hands. It's got to be relevant to PC7, I suppose, is the key question.
Okay. Well, I'll leave off Te Aki Mene Toto, but I just noticed the other day that you had two witnesses and I wasn't sure that you really had enough information. If you wanted more information, I could talk to it. Otherwise, if you're fine, that's fine.
I don't think we need it. You're now dealing with the Tairi scroll plane. I don't think either witness actually identified that it was the scroll plane, which would have been a good place to actually start. But we know it's the scroll plane, and we understand the values associated with the scroll plane. We understand the initiatives also, which is community-led initiatives around the water wetland management to do with that scroll plane. I know that you've got $4.5 million from
yes.
the fund, which is available via the government to support those initiatives, and also know that there may be other community-driven initiatives in addition to the funds supported by government. So beyond that, do I need to know anything?
No, that's fine.
No.
I think you've got a good
yeah,
handle.
I mean, I understand the signal by farming is that it's not just standing by waiting for other people to tell it how to fix problems if indeed there is a problem out of the tidy scroll plan. I don't know that.
I think it's a great opportunity for us to do some really good work in the catchment.
And that evidence was clearly given by the two witnesses. Oh, well, by one witness, in fact, the female farmer,
Emma?
And I've forgotten her
Emma
name,
Crutchley.
Forgive me. Mm. There have been so many farmers, but that evidence was clearly given by that particular witness.
Mm. Okay. So farm maps. So mm-hmm. there's been a lot of questioning during the hearing on maps. I'd just like to say there's been a lot of technology development in this space, and software for mapping has and will continue to improve. Mm. Every farm business should have a farm map. It's a really important part of managing and governing your business, and as well as that, we're all going to have software to record carbon emissions, etc.
So the questions there are coming from the Regional Council's lawyer, Mr Moore. He's asking those questions because it was put to us by a witness in ORUG that it would be difficult for farmers to identify on their land where they're irrigating, which was a little surprising because that would not be the sophisticated level of farming as I understand it to be in 2021, and that's the purpose of the cross-examination. And you're confirming, yes, actually, farmers will know that, and they have systems available to them to map it accurately. So
I think at the moment the issue really for farmers is that we're waiting to see which system the regulator is going to choose.
Yeah.
And whether the government's going to get involved and decide that this is the system that everyone will use, or whether they're going to let there be competition in the market.
Mm.
So I think a lot of farmers, us included, are just waiting to see which is the system that we should buy into.
But that's not to say that farmers won't have a pretty good handle on where they're irrigating, the maximum area where they're irrigating, albeit that the within season, those irrigation, where they are irrigating will change. Mm. And Mr Sangster, you've talked to that this morning. But actually within a year or even between years, depending on the model of farming, the actual block of land might also change, and the court's aware of that.
Yeah. And then under area irrigator, which I talked a little bit to, because I am concerned about trying to restrict the area, because I think there could be unintended consequences of doing that.
Like now, that's something I am interested in. We've identified one, and the regional council, or parties involved, are looking to plug that gap, and that's the issue to do with stranded assets. What is a stranded asset? At the moment, it's sitting with the irrigation mainline having been put into the ground, and we understand, the evidence was, that when rolling out a large development on a property with one or more pivots, you will put the mainline in for all pivots. You will put the mainline in for the horticultural enterprises also. That gets rolled out at the same time. Not so other forms of irrigation like K-lines. But if there's another issue, that another area that we ought to be exploring, now is the time to be highlighting that to us. So we're interested in that.
Yeah. So what I say is that I think having the area bigger means that, you know, that you can choose your paddocks at different times, you can think about your soil types, you can use crops, it can help prevent continual cropping on one particular paddock. If you have a choice of paddock, it can help prevent pugging and soil damage. I think being able to use water in the spring to establish crops, particularly in our environment when it's so dry, can be a really useful use of water, and so being able to use that water when there's plenty can be really, really helpful to a farm system and really help its economic viability. Sometimes it actually does rain, not very often, but you know that happens, and that really helps us. VRI is a really good thing. I think farmers are going to get much more discerning about their water use. And the other thing I would say, that just because I have a larger area doesn't mean I use more water. Look, I think the important thing is the total volume of water that I have. If I know the amount of water I've got for a month, please leave me with some choice about making the decision about which paddocks and where I apply that water. In the future, I think farmers are going to be much more discerning. They're going to be driven by technology and best practice, but they're also going to be driven by the cost to irrigate. And I would suggest that over-regulation in this space would not be needed. Look, to be quite frank, it is very cheap to flood irrigate and board a dike. Once you put a pump in and VRI and all the technology that goes with it, you really think very hard about what you're doing with your water. Farmers are very responsive to regulatory and market signals, particularly if given time and knowledge to make changes. Many farms in the Maniitoto have a balance of farmland. They have some dry land, they have some irrigated land, and they have some hill country. To have some irrigated land, a proportion of land irrigated, is vital to their long-term sustainability, and it's because of the harsh Maniitoto environment and its short growing seasons. We really need to be able to grow crops and make supplementary feed, and we do that often off that irrigated area. It enables them to finish their stock in the summer, it reduces their reliability on the store market and enables them to optimise the value they receive for their livestock. And it's going to become increasingly important when we have to start measuring our carbon emissions, because those farmers that can grow and finish their stock quicker will have lower emissions. So what I say in summary to that is I understand from listening to evidence that it's thought we need to claw water back, and it would be better, in my opinion, to limit the volume of water per farm than limit or specify the area to be irrigated. An unintended consequence of not letting farmers irrigate a greater area if they are more efficient will mean they will intensify the production on that area and increase the inputs, which may cause more environmental problems. Technology solutions and good management will help farmers make their water go further and help with the payback on infrastructure. Your Honour, this is a very important point, and I would ask you to try not interfere with farm management choices and allow farmers flexibility, as I believe they will make the best choices for their business and the environment. Do you want to ask anything?
I am interested in paragraph 24, in particular these third sentence, unintended consequence, but we'll ask that question when we get after we've heard from cross-examination.
Okay. Flow sharing, so just a couple of points on that. I would caution you about trying to regulate flow sharing agreements. We're very practical. We work together and we'll come up with a solution for ourselves at work. We need a framework or a bottom line. But they'll come up with better targeted solutions that suit their particular situation than the court or ORC ever could. I've got that saying about the Maniototo. Look, and I think we've moved on from that, but farmers are very good at policing each other. We flow share in the Tyro River, as I explained to you. We use Susie McKeague because there's four of us. For our flow sharing agreement with Crossins, we just do it ourselves. I would suggest that all ORC need to do is keep a copy of the flow sharing agreement and have some sort of arbitration or mediation clause. Starting point for calculating irrigation. The court seems concerned that people will game the system and try and grab a whole lot of water to maximise their starting point. For a start, there's not a lot of extra water to grab when you need it in the hot summer months. Just because it says on a piece of paper that you're allowed so much water doesn't equate to the water being available. We can only take the water when it's there, and in the summer dry conditions in the Maniototo, there's not often a lot there. Setting a starting point could be problematic in some cases. For example, a young farmer who has just bought a property that has not been irrigated efficiently by a previous owner, should he be penalised? One size may not fit all, and I think this is an example of grandparenting.
I would say that that's not necessarily an issue that the court has raised, but it is an issue that has been raised on, if you can call it, both sides of the primary sector debate. And so the contribution that the court has made is to say, if that is an issue, how do you test the issue, if it is an issue? And the court has made a suggestion about that, and I'm not quite sure the experts got to it, but there was a ready test, which would be, I would have thought, acceptable to the farming community to get past the point that has been brought to us.
Thank you, Your Honour. Water storage. We believe that water storage is an important part of the solution for all stakeholders. In an ideal world, there'd be more Loganburn dams and Falls dams where people can share costs and benefits. Unfortunately, these large schemes seem to have become politically, environmentally and economically too difficult. Farmers have started to invest in on-farm storage because they recognise, like we do, that it's better to store water when there's plenty rather than try to use it directly from creeks and rivers when all stakeholders have different views on allocations and minimum flows. Modern irrigation techniques require a continuous flow, which is easier to implement out of a storage dam. In the Maniototo, there'd be at least 20-yard dams that have been constructed in the last 10 years. Water storage is part of the solution, and I would not like to see it over-regulated or overpriced to process the necessary consents. And there seems to have been a rapid escalation in the requirements for a consent even since we constructed our dam. Stakeholders, in my opinion, should be supportive of farmers who are prepared to invest in water storage because it makes the conversations around residual flows, minimum flows and water allocations much easier. To the question of how big storage should be, the answer lies in risk mitigation and what the individual farm business can afford. In our case, we tried to balance the cost of the dam construction with a view on how many days storage we could afford to hold. In some years it won't be enough, and in some years it will be more than enough. Farming businesses will use other risk strategies as well to manage periods of drought or reduce water availability, such as I've talked about, crops, lucerne, different stock classes that can be traded, blocks of land in different locations, etc. I wanted to give you some comments about review clauses because I thought you might be interested in that as we have it in our consent. So we have review clauses in our consent, which we think is a pragmatic approach when issuing a long-term consent. To us, it seemed more preferable to have some review rather than have to go through the whole exercise and cost of renewing a short-term consent. The ORC have issued water direction notices before in extreme situations and turned irrigators off, and no doubt it will happen again. I think that farmers can accept that over time there'll be change, and I reflect on the huge change in irrigation practices over the last 20 years, and there's no doubt it will continue. And with more science and technology, who knows what irrigation in the Tairi catchment will look like in 20 years' time, and what impact will Te Mana O Tua I have. I think it's important that it's seen to be equitable across all farmers. For example, we objected to our consent being tied to a minimum flow in the Tairi River when the other consent above us did not have the same condition. We accept that in the future, if everyone had this condition, we should have it as well. This was one of the scenarios we asked the ORC when we visited them prior to renewing our consent, and one of the reasons that we wanted storage, so that we could maintain some irrigation if consents were in the future linked to a minimum flow in the Tairi, or we got a notice of direction. Everyone has to expect to do their bit. Changes to minimum flow conditions. I think farmers accept there will be minimum flow conditions in rivers in the future and that all stakeholders have different ideas about what these should be. We have a minimum flow in the Tairi already. Our Tairi River right adheres to this condition. We understand it. We start rationing and sharing the water when it approaches the minimum flow, and we use management techniques to mitigate. Some years we're turned off, other years minor impacts. Is it practical and sensible to have minimum flows for every little creek and tributary with their wide range of unique characteristics? You've heard in evidence about creeks that dry out and flow underground, for example. We need to do work in this area to understand the hydrology of our tributaries. I believe minimum flows should be set with a targeted collaborative catchment group approach rather than one size fits all. Setting and changing of minimum flows, if deemed necessary, should take place slowly over time rather than abrupt changes. Sudden changes do not give farmers time to adapt and change their farming practices and invest in infrastructure and can lead to unintended consequences. And finally, the importance of irrigation. Agriculture is vitally important to the New Zealand economy, particularly at the moment with tourism crippled, and in a climate like the Maniatota, irrigation is essential to the viability of our farming business and the survival of our local communities. Land use will move to its most productive return over time. In Marlborough, it's viticulture, Rangiora lifestyle blocks, Bay of Plenty kiwifruit. A worrying trend at the moment is the move towards forestry and carbon farming. Beef and Lamb New Zealand figures show a reduction of 800,000 in sheep numbers in 2020. Government figures show that sheep and beef farmland will decrease by 20% over the next 15 years due to forestry establishment. I'm concerned that some people don't value our agricultural businesses and their contribution to the New Zealand economy. If we set the bar too high on consent renewals and or do not give people time to adjust, rural mental health and stress will increase. Will there be unintended consequences such as people selling their farms or part of their farms for forestry or carbon farming like we're seeing in other parts of New Zealand? Could the Maniatoto become one big Naseby forest? What effect would this have on the vibrancy of our local Maniatoto community?
Now, as to do with what to do with the consents that are in the system, that is for the court to decide. So we'll just leave it at that, I think.
Okay.
So we're going to take morning tea, and Mr. Moore will ask you his questions. All right? Thank you. Which means you're on your oath, so you can talk to each other, but you can't chat to anybody else. All right? Cheers.
All rise.